Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And tonight, a disastrous July 4th weekend. I was about to say 4th of July, and for some reason I like dumped out and said July 4th instead. I don't know why. But yes, we've got a special disaster movie to watch, but then we couldn't find a second one, so we watched something with Carl Urban.
Which is its own kind of disaster.
So mean.
I know. That was uncalled for. I'm sorry. It was right there.
And... No, I get it. I'm not going to debate that point. We'll talk about the movie soon enough. Before we get there, we got some random crap to deal with. I just want to recommend a video game to everybody. It's called Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night. I don't know how familiar you are with the Castlevania franchise.
I watched that cartoon.
That is the extent to which. Okay. We've had a badass cartoon once. But anyway, what happened was they made this game called Castlevania Symphony of the Night. It completely reimagined what a side-scrolling action RPG could be, completely blew apart the franchise, and then the entire like world started making games like that. It was a huge classic. And then the company that makes Castlevania games got super bored and said, we don't want to make Castlevania games anymore. So the guy who developed that game came back and made his own fake new Castlevania game. And that's what Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night is. Okay. It is a bootleg Castlevania game from the maker of the best Castlevania game.
Awesome.
And it's darn good. I had a great time playing it, and I want to recommend it to everybody. It's great action, beautiful design. Lots of wonderful references to things. You know, they have all sorts of cameo monsters from other games. Really just a great job all around. Thumbs up, Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night.
Cool.
Next up, television.
TV. Yes.
Go
Who's
for
gonna
it.
Who's going to go first? I'm going to go first. Okay.
You're going to go first.
So there is a new forensics show on Netflix called Exhibit A.
I watched all of it.
Oh, okay. I only watched one episode. I watched the blood spatter episode.
Oh my god, that was
so... It is so upsetting.
I know.
Oh my god. Are they all like that?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
It's rough.
Like, I love science. I love forensic science. I think it's fascinating. But junk forensic science is the worst thing.
It's so upsetting.
But it's not even really junk science. It's like, I suppose the science is sound. Yeah. But it has to do, it's this cold case, and 25 years or 27 years after it happened, this woman is convicted of shooting her husband based on like a tiny little speck of blood on a nightgown that turns out to not actually be blood.
No, there was apparently a spray of blood all over the nightgown. And then they're like, well,
microscopic.
So then we went in with an actual microscope and we examined every little thing he called blood. And of the 25 pieces, they were all just lint and one of them was blood.
Well, it doesn't even say that. It's like, it's one speck tested positive for blood. And that was it.
And that was it. Of the
all of the other microscopic
things that the expert had said was blood spatter.
Yeah. But, like, I don't understand why this woman is still in jail.
It's insane. Maybe she's not by the time it aired, because this is ridiculous.
Well, prison, technically. She's in prison.
That's true, yes.
But it's just, it's so upsetting to watch. Never mind the fact that the prosecution, the police, never looked at any other suspects. They thought it was her. They couldn't do anything about it. And finally they could. And they put her in prison. And it's like, this guy has had death threats made against him.
They do the whole episode without telling you. And then in the last 5 minutes, they're like, why didn't they look at the guy who phoned his house and threatened to kill him repeated times? Why didn't they look at the guy who broke the windows at his work trailer and vandalized his house? Why not look at the guy who owned the shotgun that was used?
Exactly. Like, what? And then they show you a picture of the guy who owned the gun and he's smiling in his mugshot.
I know. We wanted to question him, but by the time that, he's moved to, like, another country.
So no, he moved to Vietnam. So
Vietnam, yes.
That's the end of that.
Jesus.
Holy shit. Well, I hope the Innocence Project gets a hold of this, because...
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the problem with a lot of the states in the U.S. The justice system is so focused on being punitive as opposed to restorative or rehabilitative.
Yep.
It's just like, well, you look like you're guilty and somebody needs to hang for this. So,
good sorry. Enough for us. And literally, it's good enough for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, yeah. It's so upsetting.
Yeah. Well, the state of Texas better get ready to write a big fat check because
I know, right?
Holy shit.
Wait until you get. I think another one of them's in Texas, too, because when you get to the one about photogrammetry, you'll be like, wow.
Oh, no.
It's crazy that this man is in jail at all. And I'm not going to tell you why.
Yeah.
Let's just say it is a case of mistaken identity, right? And because you see this, there's a robbery and you see the guy, what he looked like at the time. And you see the robbery photo and you're like, okay, I can see why they think it's this guy. Like, I can see how this happened. And then you will find out the fact that why it can't be this guy. And you'll be like, oh, okay. No, this is just nonsense. This is just people look alike.
Right.
He should not have been in jail for 10 years.
Oh, is this like that 13 alibis guy?
No. This guy, weirdly, he unluckily didn't have an alibi. But when you find out that it was not him, why it was, could not have been him, you'll be like, yeah, it could not have been him. Okay. And he's only in jail at all because he must have had the worst lawyer in the world.
Oh, no.
It's like, I don't do forensic testing, but it's like, I could tell you how to forensically prove this guy couldn't have done it. Oh, it's an amazing show, though. It's an amazing show. They only do four episodes.
It just, like, I find this stuff, it really upsets me because, first of all, an innocent person is in prison, and that's terrible. And then when you sort of find out about how badly they were failed, like, on all counts. And so this woman who was accused of shooting her husband, they speak with one of the jurors, and he's like, yeah, well, we didn't like the defense's blood expert. He felt like he was smarter than the rest of us. I'm like, that's not a reason to convict a woman.
I know. Because
you didn't like the guy's attitude.
Oh, my God. But so many of them are like that. Oh,
Jesus. Like, this you is the problem.
You hear that story over and over. It's like when I was watching The Staircase, and there's this whole trial consultant. They're like, Michael, here's the thing. You seem like you're smarter than people, and juries hate that.
Hate that. I know. So, it's like, this shouldn't be about emotion, but everything is.
I know.
It's like, maybe that's why we should always just have bench trials, or you should opt for one if you have the choice.
Yeah, it does seem that way, because if you're not the most likable person in the world, and it's just a nightmare. But good four episodes. The corpse dog one is fascinating.
Oh, okay.
Because it's not actually, like, you'd think it would be more, it's fascinating because I don't think the guy and his corpse dogs are bad at their job, but it's this weird situation where it's like people are trying to use a science for something it never should have been used for.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've seen that plenty of times. Yeah. But it's pretty shocking. okay. I think you're going to love the rest of the show.
Like, all right. Really, I have to do it. Like, just, I have to watch one and then, like,
take a break.
Take a break for like a good week. Or I'm ready for another one.
That is going to be the smart move, trust me.
So upsetting.
It was. It was legit upsetting to watch. God. Like, it's really good, but it's so upsetting at times. All right. We both watched it. It's really good.
Is that what you were going to talk about?
No. Oh, I just wanted to say that they added a new spate of Jeopardies, and their trick this time is the first episode of every season.
You're the only one who cares about this. Yeah,
but this is so good. So if you watch the first episode, right? So it's like, and it's not actually the first, you'd think when they say the first episode of every season, that the one from the first season would be the first ever episode of Jeopardy. But it's just a random episode from the first season, and then the pilot, the first episode of every season afterwards. Mm-hmm. And, oh my God, the first episode is crazy because the set looks completely different.
Yeah.
It's like red. And weird. Everything looks weird. The televisions are strangely low tech seeming. Like, the televisions are
oddly. Well, the show has been on forever. Of course, the tech is going to evolve. No.
Here's the weird part.
The set will change.
No. That's what I'm about to tell you. Then you get to the second episode, the first episode of the second season, you're like, oh, it's the exact stage we have now. So they have this completely different set the first season. And then by the second season, you're like, okay, well, they've made tiny refinements since, but it is basically the exact same set for the next 35 years.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so strange. It's like, starts out completely different. Then after 1 year, it completely changes. And here's the best part, and the part that just kind of blew me away. In the first season, I'm sad I only got to see one episode of it, because it's in the first season. Like, the audience is really active.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're, like, whooping and hollering and saying, oh, when someone gets it wrong. Like, the audience is actively, like, a part of the thing, not the respectful, quiet people we've come to expect from Jeopardy audiences. Right. Yeah, so it's, like, a totally different vibe. And the biggest change, and they changed this right at the end of the first season, it used to be you could ring in whenever you wanted.
Oh, you didn't have to finish talking?
You didn't have to wait. In the first season, you didn't have to wait for him to finish the question. You could just ring in whenevs.
Shit.
And I'm like, yeah, I know. It completely changes the game because he's in the middle of saying something and it'll be like, ding, one of the people will ring in. So essentially the game goes to the fastest reader.
Right.
Yeah, so, and right at the start of the second season, they're like, okay, well, we're completely rejiggering this. That didn't work. And so they rebuild how the show works. And once you get to the first the first episode of season two, it is the Jeopardy we know and love for the rest of its run.
Right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And the best part is they doubled the money after the first season. And then they didn't change the money again until, like, what, 2012? So, yeah, it worked out pretty well. Okay. Next up, we have...
movies.
You watched a movie?
I did.
Ooh.
I watched The Perfection.
I've never heard of this.
Oh, it's new. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
And it is weird and okay. I've decided not very good. It took me a while. No. I had to think about it. But...
what is it?
So it's about this woman who went to this very prestigious music school, and she was like she's a cellist, and she was a sort of prodigy cellist. But she had to leave the school when her mother got sick.
Oh.
And her mother is now dead. And this other woman now has all the fame that she would have had.
Ah, okay. Had she stuck with it?
Yeah. Had she, yes. So she meets up with the guy who runs the school and meets this other, the famous cellist. And then it just takes this weird turn. And the way the movie is structured is, like, stuff will happen, and then it will rewind, and you'll see the other side of the story, or, like...
oh, okay.
So it's, like, I don't know if it's really necessary.
Do you not like that device?
Not really, because if you just sort of let... if you just keep moving forward from the point where you rewound, we'll figure out what happened.
Right. Okay, I see what you're saying.
You don't need to just cut stuff out and then back up to show us everything you cut from the first time we watched the scene play out. So it's a weird stylistic choice.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's necessary.
It works particularly well.
Yeah.
That's too bad. I'm sad to hear that. My, for me, I watched the new Spider-Man movie, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I know you hate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You've never been clear on why you hate Spider-Man exactly?
Stu. It's not something I want to talk about.
Do you know what people say about the unexamined life? But anyway.
I know why I don't like Spider-Man. I just don't feel like sharing it.
Oh my god. You're so mad at Spider-Man.
I'm not mad at him. I
don't like him.
I've made a choice.
You've made a choice in life and you're not going to change it now. I've devoted myself to this antipathy towards Spider-Man long enough.
He talks too much.
Okay, there you
go.
Shut
the fuck up, Spider-Man.
Wow. But it is delightful from beginning to end. I think it's a great ride. And the post-credit sequences are some of the most exciting things ever. And there's one I'm going to ask your opinion on after we're on the show, because it's still relatively new and I don't want to spoil the movie for anybody, but...
okay.
Yeah, it really is a incredibly fun ride. I liked it even more than I liked Homecoming, and I liked Homecoming a ton. So check out Spider-Man Far From Home. Really great production. What's his name? Jake Gyllenhaal's really good in it as Mysterio. Like, thumbs up. They did a great job on this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So next up, I believe we have a list.
We do have a list. Ooh. So this week's list is a look at the 10 best disaster movies.
Ooh.
So this is from the Wichita Eagle.
Okay.
And it was published in 2018.
I can't wait to find out.
All right. So
I'm worried that Skyscraper is not going to be on there.
Well, this list was made in honor of Skyscraper.
Oh, it was? Oh, okay. Yeah. Good. Makes perfect sense. Oh, Skyscraper. I know you weren't actually good, but I love you so much.
Oh, so much fun. Like, that is a fun movie.
You're not good in any conventional sense of the word. But you're so much fun.
Okay, all so right. This list is not enumerated. It's not in any real order that I can discern, because it's not alphabetical or chronological. It's just 10 movies.
It's just a list. Okay,
it's let's just do a it. List. All right, it starts with Cloverfield. I don't
off
think
to a bad
alien
start,
attacks
Clamps
qualify
is a disaster,
as a disaster.
By the way, all 10 of these movies could be Godzilla movies if that was the case.
Right?
There's 10 amazing Godzilla movies, so, you know. Okay, but sure, Cloverfield, what the hell?
I know, I disagree.
Oh, no, you know what? I think I know what their logic is, and tell me if you think I'm crazy here for what their logic might be. Mm-hmm. I think they're saying that maybe characteristically a disaster movie should be focused on the people dealing with the disaster?
No.
And that's what Cloverfield is about.
No. Nope.
What do they say then?
Because Cloverfield is on this list, it's a disaster. Like, anything that involves the destruction of a city or the earth is a disaster.
No, I'm saying
by whatever vector.
No, I'm saying that if it's focused just on people trying to escape a disaster, like, for example, a Godzilla movie isn't focused on people trying to escape a disaster. It's focused on Godzilla's fighting. A Transformers movie isn't focused on people trying to escape a disaster. It's about people trying to help giant robots punch other giant robots, right? And so I think, I don't know if this is what they're going for, but I'm saying
I'm the one reading the list to you. I know for a fact that it's just about stuff getting destroyed. It's not about the people surviving whatever.
Okay, I'm just saying, to be fair, Cloverfield has more in common than Towering Inferno than it does with Godzilla, even though it is about a giant monster movie. Go next.
The Day After Tomorrow.
Okay, see, that's kind of a disaster movie.
It's exactly a disaster movie.
It's a disaster movie. Fun fact, I'm in The Day After Tomorrow.
But only your haircut is really...
Only my haircut, it's true.
Visible.
I'm completely blocked by somebody in the foreground, so you cannot tell it's me at all. But in the party scene after the academic decathlon, I am totally there. And right. I had a chance to be in a bunch of the flooding scenes, but I was already...
You said you turned it down.
I was already back in... It was this weird situation. They were literally filming over Christmas. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I got a call when I was in, like, because I was living in Montreal for university at the time, and I got a call to, like, come back to Montreal from Ottawa to put on a wetsuit and stand in really cold water for a week. And I'm like, maybe not.
And it's 2 hours away.
I know. Was it a terrible mistake? Absolutely. I should have 100% done that. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But, you know, that ship has sailed.
All right. Next is Deep Impact.
Wow. Okay. Deep Impact. I haven't seen that since it originally came out. I don't remember it being that good.
I haven't seen it at all.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't, I don't think of it as like, oh yeah, that was a real classic monster movie. Monster movie. Disaster
movie.
Well,
see, that's what I'm talking about. You have monster movies and you have disaster movies.
Well, this is a disaster movie. I'm just talking crazy. Yeah. And it's weird. Like, I remember the movie, but at the same time, It's strange. Like, I really feel like disaster movies have to be about people specifically dealing with a disaster. And that is movie both about, like, what it does. It's more a movie about what do people do when they're facing the possibility of the Earth blowing up, and then there's other people trying to stop it. Like, the actual disaster is such a tiny part of the movie that I really don't think it could qualify. Because, like, literally, for the whole movie, they think the Earth is getting blown up. Mm-hmm. And then 5 minutes from the end of the movie, they're like, oh, well, not 5 minutes, but 10 minutes from the end of the movie, they're like, well, we cut the asteroid into two pieces. So one of them's going to miss the Earth, and the other one's going to create a giant tidal wave that wipes out the east coast of the United States. But that part of the movie is such a tiny fraction that I hesitate to even call it a disaster movie.
Right.
All right, go.
Gravity.
No!
See? See, oh it's God, not about right. people dealing with their own kind of disaster.
Wow, no, this is not what a disaster movie is at all. Like, by the way, All Is Lost isn't a disaster movie either, even though it's the exact same movie as Gravity, except on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, that's not a disaster. Wow, these people really don't know how to make a list, do they? Yeah, you were totally right. Okay, next up.
Earthquake.
Oh, God, the Dwayne Johnson movie?
No. First of all, that's called San Andreas.
Oh, that's called San Andreas, right. Which one is Earthquake?
It's from 1974.
Okay, I've just never heard of this.
No, it's about an earthquake.
I assume I assume it's a post-Towering Inferno, all the studios wanted to rush out their own disaster movies kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What's next?
All right. The Impossible.
I've never heard this. This is a weird list.
Okay, so this is from 2012, and it's about a tourist family in Thailand caught...
Right, the giant tsunami movie. I forgot that movie existed.
So, I've seen a tsunami movie. I think this is it. But I don't remember being called The Impossible.
I didn't remember. I remembered that there was a movie about that tsunami. I just did not remember that it was called The Impossible. And I remember nothing about the actual movie.
So, anyway, whatever.
Oof.
Next, The Poseidon Adventure.
Okay. I mean, Poseidon Adventure is a pretty good example. You got a boat full of people. It tilts upside down. They have to try to escape. Yeah. I mean, and that's, I think that's a big enough deal to call it a disaster.
Like, it's a disaster at sea.
Yeah. If a giant flaming building is a disaster, then this is a disaster.
Exactly.
Okay. Go.
San Andreas.
No!
It's a disaster movie, but it is not good.
It's so terrible.
It's so bad.
We're gonna spend the whole show comparing the movie we watched to San Andreas and talking about how this movie we watched did it so much better when it's essentially the same movie. Mm-hmm. Oh. No, yeah, San Andreas is garbage. Just don't watch San Andreas.
And it begins with a really weird message about distracted driving.
I know.
And then it just goes from there. And it's like, I don't understand what this is. Like, what am I watching?
It's not clear what your message is with this movie. And it's not making me happy to be watching this. So let's go away.
No. Okay, next is The Towering Inferno.
Oh, I actually genuinely really like The Towering Inferno.
I've never seen it.
You totally should. It's very 70s in that it's way too long by today's movie standards. But there's a lot of fun stuff in there. And just as a way to watch all of Hollywood get together.
Yeah.
For this giant extravaganza, it's incredibly fun. So yeah, I would recommend you check it out. I know you never watch stuff at double speed, but consider it.
No.
Okay. Next up.
All right, last one is The Wave.
I haven't seen The Wave.
Yes, you have.
The Wave. No, I keep forgetting that's what it's called. I know. I keep forgetting it's not called, like, The Norway Wave or something. No, The Wave is amazing. We covered it here on the show. Did I say
that one? Yeah. So I previewed a lot of lists.
Okay.
And, right, I gave you a choice as to which one you would cover.
Somehow I picked the worst one.
Well, actually, they're all really disappointing. Because, like, what I would consider, like, alien invasion movies appear on a lot of these lists. Movies that I wouldn't think of as disaster
movies.
Those
are not disaster movies. You were totally right to steer towards this one.
But also, suspiciously absent from all of these lists.
Okay.
Is Tower.
How did Tower not make it onto any of these lists? Do people not remember Tower?
I don't think people know about Tower.
Like, it's on, it was on Netflix for the longest time, though.
So, like, you owe it to yourselves to see Tower if you haven't already. It is so good. If you read the synopsis, it sounds like the end of Die Hard, but that's how the movie starts.
Yep.
And it just goes from there. And it's like the best 2 hours you're going to spend.
Well, and the thing is, it's like
a Korean movie.
The best? Well, first off, no. I mean, there's better Korean movies, but it's
Train to Busan. But...
yeah. Train to Busan, Man from Nowhere, I Saw the Devil. There's, I mean, so good. This is so incredible from beginning to end. And what I like love most about it is it does a better job of juggling its giant cast of people trying to escape than almost like any other movie.
Yeah.
Like there are so many characters and everybody gets great moments and all of the escapes are thrilling. And I'm not even getting into who my favorite characters in it are because you know who they are and I'm not going to spoil it for people.
Yeah. Also absent from all of the lists is 2012.
Oh, yeah. I would put that in over...
forget that that movie existed.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but I'd put that over, what but do you call it?
The disastery parts of 2012?
Yeah.
Are amazing.
They are. I'd put that over Day After Tomorrow any day of the week.
It just in terms of, like, world...
Yeah, disaster spectacle. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. You're totally right about this one. It definitely deserves a place on this list over over The Day After Tomorrow, which is, you know, kind of eh for its disaster stuff.
And also, one final note here. I'm surprised a movie that wasn't on this list, but was on all of the others that I previewed.
Yeah.
Twister.
God, how did I forget Twister? Oh, right? God, now I feel ashamed. Because, yeah, Twister's a disaster classic.
It's so good. I just recently rewatched it.
Yeah, it holds up.
It does. Like, some of the effects, but like...
it's just a really, like, really great
movie. Exciting movies. It does. Yeah. It holds up.
Yeah, it's a thrilling watch. Yeah. And you're right about the effects, but it is just a thrilling movie to watch whenever you want to watch it. So, yeah. All right, I guess that's our additional recommendations. Tower and Twister. Yeah. And it's weird that neither of... how is Tower not on any of the lists? That's crazy.
I mean, maybe the good people at the Wichita Eagle just don't know about it.
Tower. I was like, dude, Google, you know, great disaster movies before you're going to put this list together. Oh, no, I'm going to do it entirely based on memory. I'll be fine. I've seen all the disaster movies.
Right.
All right. Okay, next up, sadly, there's not as much overlap between the genres of horror and disaster as you'd think. I mean, people running away from Cthulhu could be make for a great movie. You
know, but then wouldn't that be like another version of an alien?
Actually, that would be another invasion. That would basically movie. Just be. Well, no, I don't know that he is an alien. I think it's his planet.
Well, no, you know what I mean. I said a version of.
Oh yes, you're right. No. I don't know why I like locked in on the word alien there. But anyway, you're absolutely right. It definitely could, and so that probably would disqualify it by our own standards. But hopefully you have found us a horror disaster movie now.
I have not. Instead, I found you an upcoming horror movie called Feedback.
Okay.
All right. Bear with
about
me.
About audio technician who starts murdering people? No, wait. They've already had that.
They did? What was that?
Barbarian Sound Studio.
Well, it's a little bit more complicated.
I know. It's way more complicated than that. It's actually ridiculous to try and describe that movie that way.
Yes.
But the movie's called Feedback, so I had to try.
All right. Well, it was a good effort.
Okay.
Jarvis Dolan is the star journalist of the successful London late night radio show, The Grim Reality. Terrible name for a show.
I would not watch that. Listen to that.
Listen to it. Yeah. He plans to reveal evidence of Russian interference in the Brexit process on his program. But, the evening takes a macabre turn when two armed men burst into the studio, taking control of the show. Their mission: to shed light on a scandal that could spell the end of Jarvis's established career at all costs. Forced to continue with the live program following the script of the assailants and without ever revealing that they are in danger, Jarvis Dolan's night will soon become a nightmare.
That is a terrible synopsis.
I know.
Oh my God. Also,
It only gets worse, because now I'm going to read to you a very long quote from the director.
Please.
I like to think that we have made a film that is labeled hashtag elevated horror, or that we can qualify it as a social horror thriller. No. The characters and feedback are complex, contradictory, and blatantly human. The thematic spectrum resonates in the headlines of any media, in the social networks, and conversations that any of us could have this very morning. The film is also a profound revision of the home invasion, with its supernatural monster embodied in two individuals who are always ahead of the protagonist, powerful, unaffordable to defeat, alien to empathy and morality, and therefore terrifying. If there's one thing I've been clear about throughout the work process, it's that once you enter the world that feedback offers you, you mustn't, as happens to our characters, be able to escape. The story has to catch you and not let go until you're the one who doesn't want to let go.
Oh my god, I hate this man so much! I hate him so much! And I don't even know him!
Yeah.
That's so bad!
So I watched the trailer, which was weirdly... The movie's in English, but the trailer I watched was dubbed in Spanish.
That's very strange.
Which is weird. And I don't speak Spanish, so a little hard to understand at times.
Okay.
But it does look good. It looks kind of slick, so...
Something for us to consider, yeah.
Something for us to consider. I really enjoyed Pontypool, so it might have a bit of like a Pontypool thing going on as well.
Pontypool's an amazing movie, yeah.
It appears to be all in studio.
Nice.
So, we'll see.
The last time we watched a horror movie set all in a studio, it did not go well for us.
Oh, what was that one called? That's the one...
I'm trying to remember where the radio station, and it's night, and there's like a ghost calling in from the next day, or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad, but it was just, ugh. It was very ugh. But yeah, I am interested to hear more about this. No matter how pretentious that man is, that doesn't mean we're going to completely dismiss his film out of hand.
Now, well, Richard Brake is in it, and we like him, so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll be down for that one.
Okay.
We did actually watch movies this week, though, and first up we have...
Hangman! Which I was mean to earlier, and I apologize. Right. Retired cop Al Pacino is forced back on the job when a serial killer challenges him and Carl Urban to a game of hangman. It's not actually what's going on in this movie.
There is no game of hangman in this movie.
I thought that made for a much better synopsis.
Oh, no, totally.
Like, I would watch that movie.
Yeah, but the game of hangman, what kind of amazed me about the movie is that the characters put in zero effort to solve the game of hangman.
Driving me crazy.
Because the thing is, it's like, okay, at one point they have like five letters, and it's clearly like, it's clearly the word eviction.
It is clearly the word eviction.
Eviction, and then there's blank M, so I'm like, okay, so it has to be a Latin word that looks like eviction.
Well, I knew it was going to be a Latin word because Al Pacino...
Pacino does Latin crossword puzzles. Yeah.
So, okay, but at the same time, it's like, I can't figure out what this fucking word is, and it doesn't seem to matter at all to the characters in the movie, even though clearly it's important to the killer.
The killer is leaving you giant clues, and you're like, let's not pay attention to those or try to solve them at all.
Instead, it's just like the clue, the killer leaves clues as to who the next victim will be.
Yeah.
But he's killing, like, all the kills are 24 hours apart, so it's really not a lot of time to
figure out,
decipher all of these clues that he's leaving you. Never mind the fact that if you do figure out what this fucking word is, how is that going to help?
And the thing is, when we find out that it's like...
who the killer is and why he's killing, it's like, what the shit?
What did that have to do with the Latin word and all of this?
What does it have to do with anything?
Yeah, and then, I mean, well, we'll talk about the real ending in a minute. But for right now, it is a pretty, you know, standard run-of-the-mill post-7. There's a serial killer running around, and they have to try and catch them. And the serial killer is doing this in... kind of ridiculous ways.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen this movie 100 times.
But here's the thing, though. Like, I like that stuff.
Oh, me too. That's why I was so excited about The Snowman.
Because, like, I love a murder mystery. This mm-hmm. technically is, but at the same time, it's not like you have the sort of pool of suspects.
Yeah.
It's just hunting down a serial killer, but you don't know who this person is. Which also is a fun time at the movies.
Totally.
But the issue with Hangman is that, and like, let me know if you felt the same way or if this is just me being a dick. There's no nice way for me to put this. This script very much felt like a first script. And I don't mean first draft.
No,
I mean
the first script first someone ever wrote. Yeah.
Because no, totally. It is like, it's like a first novel. It's full of not mistakes, but just stuff that a more seasoned writer would know to leave out.
Yeah. Oh, completely. No, you were absolutely right. It feels, I don't know who wrote it. We didn't check into this. It does feel like an early effort because it jumps around to a ridiculous amount and it's overstuffed with extra completely unrelated details. Like, they add in a bunch of extra stuff because they think, oh, well, that's cool. And they don't think how, well, that's going to be. The fact that their captain is in a wheelchair is something that it comes up. And I'm like, I don't know why you felt the movie needed this extra detail.
Right. Like, she can be in a wheelchair. That's fine. But it's also, it's just in terms of, like, the dialogue, for instance, which is really overwrought at times. There's the third character is Brittany Snow. She's a journalist who's shadowing Carl Urban for some kind of, I don't know, profile or long form article that she's going to write about policing or detective work or something along those lines. And he asks her a question about like how she got the scar in her head. And she has this like weird florid answer. It's like nobody answers a question like that.
I know.
Clearly, like the writer is a little enamored with his or her own writing abilities, aren't that great.
It's like they give her this little monologue and you're like, do we really need a monologue there?
Again, it's like, that's not how somebody answers that question.
No, not at all.
You either give the answer or you skirt the question.
Yeah.
It's one of those two. So you don't
those are your only realistic options. You don't go off on a spiel about
I don't know, like, the challenges you face in pursuing your art or some crap like that.
I know, right?
And then everything that the captain says is very stereotypical of a tough police captain.
Yep.
And a lot of the conversation that the two detectives have, again, it's like, it's stereotyped cop stuff.
Yes.
And there's a lot of that.
That the writer saw in other movies and decided to use in their movie. That's totally what we're watching.
And so that's why I am convinced that this is a first
effort
or very early screenwriting effort from this individual.
It does. No, it absolutely does feel like someone who watched the movie Seven and said, I can do that. And then tried to do that and didn't do it very well.
Yeah.
Because the thing about Seven is there's a thematic element running through all of Seven. Right? There's a reason that all of this is happening, and it's because of, you know, what the killer wants, and it all means something when you put it together. This, you're like, I have no idea why this killer chose to express himself via a game of Hangman.
Yeah. Like, when you find out what his motivations are, which are not good.
Nope.
It's like, okay, I guess that makes sense. But again, like, what's the big deal?
I understand that your dad hanged himself.
Yeah.
Why have you transformed that into a game of Hangman with the cops with letters carved into people's chests?
Yeah. Because there's no challenge for the cops to figure out the word before the next person dies. You're going to kill someone anyway.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, and it's like, if you figured out, if one thing, let's say that they had been doing it if there wasn't just one word, right? Let's say each one had had its own word that they played a game with the cop and gave him a chance to guess a letter every so and so minutes. And if they had figured out the word, it would have led them to their victim. That would have felt like a game of Hangman was being played. Mm-hmm. But the game of Hangman was actually irrelevant to the killer's plan. Even if they had known the whole word, it wouldn't have had any effect on the proceedings.
Yes.
So it's like, he's not actually playing a game of Hangman then. He's just writing a word in a really roundabout way. And it's so frightful. It is.
But what? But why? Like, when? Okay, so that word is important to him, I guess. Yes. But why is it in Latin? And why these two particular cops? Because you find out in Carl Urban's backstory that his wife was murdered a year ago. And you find out that she was actually the hangman's first victim.
Yes.
And then all this other bullshit happened, which we'll get into. So it's like, why did you pick her? Is it something specific to do with Carl Urban? Your beef is with Al Pacino. Again, something we find out towards the end of the movie. And then all of these other victims, some appear to be chosen at random, some are not. And it's like, I don't understand what your process is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Carl Urban's wife was killed because she was a surrogate daughter to
Al Pacino.
To Al Pacino, and that was the death that would hurt Al Pacino most. Right? And then he did retire pretty soon afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is why she was chosen. And so Carl Urban getting his wife killed was incidental, for the most part, to this guy's plan.
He has to know that Carl Urban is a cop.
Oh, he does. And he does involve, after he's killed his wife, he involves Carl Urban in his game.
Directly.
But Carl Urban was not the person kicking off the game Al Pacino was. And Carl Urban's
But that is just, it's completely lost.
Oh, no, it's totally, you're absolutely right. That the film totally loses track of all of that. And it's a big problem.
It is a big problem. The film is also missing a character.
Really?
Yeah. The Brittany Snow should have had an editor or a researcher on the phone with her periodically throughout the movie, because she makes a huge discovery by snooping through Carl Urban's drawer. And I'm like, nope. You should have gotten this information from people at the paper that you work for.
Yeah, that would have been much smarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been structured way better. You're totally right. I didn't think about that at the time, but yeah, you're totally right about that.
Yeah. There needs to be another character there, if only to provide exposition.
Yeah, because it's weird how, like, other than, I'm trying to think, what did Brittany Snow accomplish in the movie
beyond? Nothing. She is just there to get attacked.
Well, no, and to tell Carl Urban that his wife was the first victim.
Well, to tell Al Pacino that Carl Urban's wife.
Yes. Because you're right. Because then.
Yeah.
But it's that is the only reason she's there, and to get attacked. Oh, and be kind of terrible at her job. Because at one point.
Sucks.
The killer leaves her a voicemail message, and she, like, doesn't check her voicemail?
It's a recording.
You're right. It's not a voicemail. It's a voice memo, because she had been recording the whole time. And then the killer, she drops her phone, the killer picks it up, it's like, it happens to be recording audio right now. I'll leave her a creepy message. And had she listened to the message right then, like, it would have foiled a lot of the killer's plans. But he, like, somehow knew that she wouldn't listen to it until pretended to have killed himself.
But even if she'd heard the message earlier, it wouldn't have foiled anything, because it's just a disembodied voice. They don't know who this fucking guy is, never mind the fact that she has seen him.
I know.
And she keeps wandering off.
She did see him face to face and could have said that the model train guy definitely wasn't him. You're right. Exactly.
She can provide a detailed sketch.
For some reason, she doesn't.
So it just, again.
It's a frustrating movie.
It's a freshman effort, I guess.
Oh my god, especially the scene where they go into the captain's house and they rescue the captain from being murdered.
No, they're not at the captain's house. They're at the house of the guy who struck.
Oh yes, you're right. Who's trucker with his ass. I'm sorry, you're right.
Because at first when they got into that, I'm like, why did she live in a house with stairs?
And then, no, like, yeah,
all right, not her house.
They specifically say they're running over to the house. Because he leaves a clue that it's that guy. Although, one scene we'll talk about another scene in a second, but so they rush there, and then the killer's like, so Carl Urban is like, oh my god, we rescued the captain. And Al Pacino's like, okay, let in the backup to search the house with us. And I counted. 60 seconds later, a guy walks past Al Pacino, and then it turns out that was the killer, who has, within 60 seconds, had a motorcycle cop from outside walk into the bathroom where he was hiding, killed that guy, stripped off all of that guy's clothes, and put those clothes on him.
I thought the guy in the bathtub was the guy who owned the house.
you'd think. But then when Carl Urban says the body, Carl Urban sees the body and he sees the gun belt on the floor and says, I've got a dead body.
It's a cop. Yeah.
It's a cop.
Yeah.
I thought too, but then he says that and I'm like, oh, I guess that's a cop he killed to take his place.
I don't know. Quite honestly, I'd sort of checked out.
It's impossible to tell. And then the thing I really love was in the very next scene, because they managed to save the captain, the killer has murdered some random other woman.
No, she's from earlier.
I know who it is, but I'm just saying the new victim has nothing to do with his plan, and he just killed her just because they had talked to her to kind of, you know, screw you, cops. But I'm just saying he has nothing to do with the guy's overall plan.
But some of the other people aren't connected to the police at all. Like, the first the victim at the school, she has no connection to the police.
No,
the guy
who
was hanging in the train yard, there's no connection there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Some of the victims appear to be random, and some of them are targeted.
Deeply connected to the... Yeah, it's like, so strange. There's no... But the worst part is, they see the body there, and they, like... There's this ridiculous scene where you see that the killer is at the top of the building... 10 feet away from where he hanged a body from a rope, watching the cops watch the body, and he's like,
not at the top of the killer standing in the train yard for God and everyone to see, yes. And then Brittany Snow sees him, doesn't say shit about it.
No, but it's like, these are two different scenes, but
after them, how come there aren't police all over the fucking city just waiting for the word to converge on the next place where they're going to find a victim so that they can run after the killer, because they know by this point that he's going to be there.
Oh God, I know, because he's there every time they go to a crime scene. The killer is always there waiting for them. He doesn't have to be, mind you,
but he is.
Like, he could have left them, the people hanging, X amount earlier. He chooses to always be there.
Yeah.
Like, he's making that decision, and it's a dumb decision on his part, but he is committed to it for some reason. And then we get to the end of the movie, where they have the giant showdown, and we find out that this is really Al Pacino's fault, because he let a kid go into the foster system after his dad killed himself, and the kid was horribly abused in the foster system. And I'm not saying that isn't a terrible situation, but I don't know why you would specifically blame the cop who happened to find your dad's body, who answered the call when your dad killed himself. This is the specific guy I'm going to blame for everything wrong in my
life. But also, see, again, just the way the movie's structured, it feels like, okay, he was abused in the foster system and that fucked him up. But isn't it more that he witnessed his dad hang himself because he was getting evicted and he blames Al Pacino for that?
Yeah, but like, I don't for know the why eviction? He would. Like, it wasn't Al Pacino's house.
Not
Al
how that
Pacino,
works.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like Al Pacino was the sheriff's deputy who was doing the eviction.
Exactly.
He's just the cop who showed up after his dad died and the death had been reported. That's all Al Pacino is in this situation.
Yeah.
It's so weird that he would fixate on him for the rest of his life over that. Wait. And then we get to the real end of the movie, because Al Pacino dies, and then Carl Urban murders the guy who killed his wife. Thumbs up for that, Carl Urban. Good call. And then we get to the real thing. And
well,
then
he was he was dead.
He was dead anyway. It's fine. He can say reach for a gun. Brittany Snow didn't see a thing. But anyway. What bothers me is, so then they have the funeral for Al Pacino. And then right after the funeral, Carl Urban gets a note.
With a Game of Hangman on it. It's like, what?
So really, the whole movie... The whole movie, we've been wondering, why has this guy chosen to express himself via hangman? And the answer is, I guess, he wasn't someone else, a different killer,
no,
or super killer.
You're working too hard.
Has decided to, like, collect people with grievances and get them to play games of... Games of Hangman with the cops.
I think you're working way too hard.
Am I, though?
Yes.
No, I obviously am. You're right. But
that's just a weird stinger for a potential sequel that's never going to happen. I don't know. Again, like, I don't know if the writer was really clear on what was going on at that point. even though it's their story.
It's like I felt like I was back in the preview screening of Darknet, where they're like, "Do you have any questions about the series?" Yeah, you left a big cliffhanger for what would be the second season. Do you know what's going to happen next? And they were all like, "No,
nope,
we got nothing." Like, I respect you so much more for being willing to tell me that, guys.
Which is fine, but it's fine. Like, did you have this problem? So the movie ends, and I'm thinking about it. It's like when Al Pacino figures out who the killer is, because they have no suspects.
Nope.
You find out that a year ago, Al Pacino arrested the guy. He didn't know at the time he was a serial killer. It was just a dude who like sideswiped his car while he was driving erratically in his van.
Yeah.
So the killer, Carl Urban, comes home and interrupts the killer in the process of killing his wife.
Yes.
And you have to assume that he then jumped in his van and sideswiped Al Pacino in his car.
That's exactly what happened. That is the timeline of the movie.
Why is he not covered in blood?
I don't know! How are there no traces of blood in his van or on his body right. When you see what he did to her Carl Urban's wife?
Very clearly, these two events are connected.
Not just connected, it's clearly, explicitly, I think, the same the same moment. He's fleeing the crime scene.
That's the only thing that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Because and yet,
these events happened a year ago, and that's why... There was no killing after Carl Urban's wife. No. Once they figure out that she was the first victim, it's like, well, why does a serial killer stop killing? He's dead or he's in prison or he's moved away.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, he's not dead because now he's killing again. So it's like, okay, so let's look at who was in prison. It's like, why not start with the guy you put in prison exactly a year ago?
Who seems... Remember when you put a guy in jail the day Carl Urban's wife was murdered? And that guy, since you're the one who put him in jail, he would have a pretty good chance that he's pissed at you about that specifically? Maybe this could be your guy?
But again, it's like, I don't understand why he wasn't covered in blood to begin with.
No, it makes zero sense.
It didn't make sense.
You were totally right to respond that way. I didn't get that either. Oh, yeah. So Hangman it's an entertaining throwback like the Snowman, and it is just as big of a mess.
Yep.
Oh, such a mess. Okay. Next up, we watched a good movie. I'm just going to say it right now. I'm going to commit to saying that this is a really good movie.
Okay.
I loved it.
So our second movie is a disaster movie, obviously. We watched The Quake, which is the sequel to The Wave. Very excited to finally get to see this movie, and it did not disappoint.
It's so good. It's such a good movie. Oh, right. I loved this movie.
I'll synopsize.
Please.
3 years after surviving the wave, geologist Christian has suffered a breakdown and is separated from his wife and kids. The death of a colleague brings him to Oslo on the eve of a massive earthquake.
Ooh.
There's a bit more going on there.
Yeah.
And before, when we were talking about watching this movie, you're like, oh man, I really hope it's not about him trying to like rescue his family.
Again.
Like San Andreas, where it's like surviving this disaster brings them together. It's like, you got separated for a reason. Clearly those issues have not been resolved. So a bit of the same thing going on here. Christian is separated from his family. And there's this really heartbreaking scene at the start of the movie when his daughter comes to visit.
And sees what a mess he is.
And he immediately sends her away again. And it's...
Yeah.
Like, it's really sad.
No, it's rough, because you watch it and you're like, oh, God, like, he didn't realize how far he had fallen until he sees himself through his daughter's eyes, and he just can't take it. Yeah. Oh, that poor guy.
And that poor girl. Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Oh. Yeah, no, that both of you feel so sad for both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, this thing lives in, like, this whole movie lives and dies by what great character work they do.
Yeah.
with this guy and his family. And I guess that's why I wasn't disappointed when it turned out to be the exact same movie as San Andreas. Well, only because, good.
Well, because you, like, first of all, you feel for these characters. Mm. And, I mean, it does help that you spent a whole other movie with them.
Oh, totally.
And you understand these people and their relationships. But at the same time, like, you still get the sense that this is a family that still really loves each other. But they're going through a rough patch because the dad has this tremendous amount of survivor's guilt that he can't, he's not dealing with. And PTSD that he can't handle.
Yeah.
And he's not getting the help that he needs for it because he's isolated himself.
And then even worse, right at the start of the movie, a geologist buddy of his gets crushed to death.
Yeah. And everybody's like,
eh.
Well, you know, like it was.
Sometimes people get crushed.
It just happens. You know, this tunnel is unsafe, blah, blah, blah.
It's a faulty tunnel. He was going there to investigate the fact that it was a faulty tunnel. We're sad, but it happens.
It happens. And then, you know, Christian sort of does his thing and realizes that his geologist buddy was actually onto something. He was tracking all of these like little tremors around Oslo. Mm-hmm. And he meets with like the head of this like huge, I don't know, it's like just a, like a geology firm, an engineering firm.
Yeah.
And he's like, and that guy, and I like how everyone's really reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And not immediately dismissive of the crazy guy who sees disaster in everything. And it's like, I understand your concerns, but let me show you what we know and what we have.
What I liked about that scene was I found the reason they... Right. The bureaucratic reason that they didn't know that a big earthquake was coming was so believable to me.
Yeah.
The idea that, well, yeah, we don't go and we check. Like there's a huge amount of blasting going on because there's always construction. And yeah. So we have zones where we know there's going to be blasting. And when we see tremors from there, we assume there's going to be blasting for reasons that we don't want to hassle these people and make it impossible to do their job. We don't make them sign and report every single time they're going to use dynamite.
They just tell us ballpark.
That we're going to be blasting in that area through this amount of time. And so all of these tremors have swept through the cracks. And you're like, you totally believe it.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And then it's finally, like, you know, as is the case, when other people realize what's going on, it's way too late.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah. And then, the big one hits, and it's pretty amazing. Just in terms of disasters, because I love the spectacle of a movie disaster.
Wow.
And this one does not disappoint.
No, it's fantastic. It looks amazing. Like, the effect on the city is just... And the thing is, it portrays it so well, because movies like San Andreas will be like, there'll be a disaster, and then there's got to be another one later on, and there's got to be some further aftershocks that are also, they have to, like, layer one on top of another for the whole movie, whereas this one, it's like, no, there's a really bad earthquake, and then the earthquake's over, and we have to deal with the aftermath of the earthquake.
But the thing, though, the way this movie is structured... The earthquake happens later in the movie than it does in, like, something like a San Andreas.
That's true.
Where you have, you know, just your little bit of buildup, then your quake, and then the human element rushing to, like, trying to find survivors, and then, you know, more disaster happens. But here it's like buildup, 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 massive earthquake, and then... Like, the last, like, I don't know, like, half an hour, 20 minutes.
Yeah, half an hour movie is, the quake has happened, we're trying to
survive. Yeah.
And it's basically just two great big set pieces in that half hour, both set in the same building. It's much smaller scale than something like San Andreas or Day After Tomorrow, but really incredible filmmaking and incredible tension in those two scenes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's so good. I have never, like, I'm nervous in elevators anyway. Okay.
I'll
admit that. But dear God, this elevator sequence was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know how much of it we want to spoil and talk about, because like, this movie,
I don't
want to
spoil any of it.
Because, it's like, People get trapped in an elevator. That's all I'll say. The big climactic disaster stuff is confined basically to one building, but it is a heart-stoppingly tense, like, 25 minutes of movie.
Yeah.
And there's, what I love about it is there's not all of this additional clutter. Like, there's not, oh, I'm the scummy businessman who wants to step on all of your heads to try and escape. My comeuppance! No! Yeah.
Nope, no, there's none of that.
No, just like, and there's not even, I mean, I'm not going to spoil too much, but like, there's nothing equivalent to that brutal scene in the first one where the guy is panicking and he's going to get them all killed and they have to drown him. Mm-hmm. That was a hard scene to watch in the first movie.
Rough.
And there's nothing that brutal this time, but the actual spectacle of the escape and the survival, I think, is bigger and more impressive this movie.
I don't know about, it's just different.
And no, it's completely different. I was more taken by this midair, you know, skyscraper stuff than I was by the underwater sunken building stuff in the first one.
Oh, okay.
I agree that they're both great. I just was more taken by the stuff in this one. I enjoyed the spectacle more here.
Okay.
Because the first one, while scary as hell, it's mostly underwater. It's all at night. The claustrophobic darkness is part of what makes it scary. But of course, fundamentally, that's just because you're imagining what they're going through. You can't really see much in that whole first movie once the wave has started. Whereas in this one, you see everything, and they have really managed to film it in an incredible way.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think the other one, the underwater stuff in the other movie, is really impressive.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally impressive. And I'm not saying this is a better movie than The Wave. I think they're pretty much equally good. I'm just saying, my personal tastes, I was more taken by the skyscraper adventure stuff than I was by the underwater hotel stuff.
Okay.
They're both incredible. They're both great sequences. I would give it, if you made me choose between these two movies, because I'm so afraid of heights anyway.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
Yeah. That's why. Obviously, I was going to be more impressed and freaked out by this one than I was by the diving sequences in the other one. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really good movie. Like, and because it's not, you know, because they're not going to do all of this fake, you know, oh, causing tension and a bunch of human antagonists and blah, 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 blah. It really is just about the steps you would try to take. Like, you've seen, you are the Cassandra. You have seen that something bad is going to happen. What can you do to stop it? And the answer, turns out, is very little.
Yeah, well, you actually can't stop it. It's an earthquake.
Well, you know what I mean, to put out the alarm and get everyone out of the building.
And he tries. He does his best.
Yeah, he does his best.
It's too late. It's just too late.
It's just too late. And there are some, yeah, as you say, we're not going to spoil all of the specific details, but from the ground rippling to the destruction of a city, like, the way they handle that visual of the earthquake is...
Yeah.
Quite impressive. And not in an over-the-top Roland Emmerich way either. In a much more grounded, this feels like a real earthquake.
There's still something to be said with the Roland Emmerich 2012 world destruction sequence.
Just basically all of the tectonic plates decide to give out simultaneously.
Yeah.
Oh, it's ridiculous. But yeah, I think... We can recommend that everybody see Quake, right? Oh, yeah.
The Quake is great. I mean, do watch The Wave first if you haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, because you want to get on board with these characters first. Because you will not get... An interesting thing is, you will not get a ton of exposition about The Wave in this movie.
No, and it starts off with just a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it's 3 years later. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's like, here the guy, there was a wave, here's one of the survivors on a news show talking about, you know, because he's both a survivor of the actual wave and an expert geologist, so he's going to be here to talk to us about it. And then, boom, 3 years later, let's get on with the story.
Yeah.
I really respected that. Like, they don't waste a ton of time re-explaining the characters of the premise. It kind of feels like, and I'm sure the people watching it first will get it, but I think to a certain extent, it assumes you've seen the first movie.
Yeah, and that's perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah. Especially since you definitely should have by now. But yeah, these are two really good disaster movies. I'm so excited to see if they make a third one. Although I don't know what it's about. It would be about a volcano. What am I saying? Of course it'll be about a volcano.
But what? You need a one-syllable word, because we had the Way of the Quake. And
oh,
then,
you're
like,
right. Lava.
The lava?
The lava.
I don't know. The eruption, but...
That's even more... That's the same as eruption. That's the same as volcano.
I know, but I think the eruption sounds better than the lava.
The or the volcano?
Or the volcano.
Yeah, okay, the eruption could work. You're right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd totally be down for them doing a third one of these, with them coming up against a volcano.
Right. They're on holiday somewhere, and...
And I gotta say, what I really liked was... one thing I really liked about the movie, and again, I don't want to spoil much, but it's like, they managed to do a decent amount of character arc stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that the choice to end the movie, and I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a character who is introduced in this movie, and they get one of the last shots in the movie. And they really say a lot with that character's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they did a really great job of making you feel what that character was going through.
Yeah.
Because
especially
we're just meeting
we don't
this
know
character.
Anything about this character.
Exactly. And this character gets like three lines to explain where they're coming from. And then they're just thrown into the action. But they manage to, through that character's actions and through a few meaningful looks and where the character goes and how the character now looks at things, really show you the arc that this character has gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that really satisfying.
Yeah.
Because it touches on the kind of family reunification stuff that is happening with Christian and his family, but it's not covering the exact same themes. Like, it's similar subject matter, but it's taken from a completely different angle.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very well done.
Yeah.
So yeah, just firing on all fronts this one. The Quake's amazing. The Quake's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that's that. Do you have any narcissism you would like to watch?
No. I do not. On a bit of a hiatus, sort of an unplanned hiatus, because...
Well, you've had a bunch of trips to take recently.
It's turned out to be a really busy summer for me.
Who knew?
Which is good. Like...
Yeah. No, it's great, but...
So, but
unfortunately,
it just means
that,
Yeah. Other stuff kind of gets falls
pushed
by
the
wayside. So
absolutely,
yeah.
For me, obviously, check out Profiling Criminal Minds. We're doing great over there. We've just recorded the bunch of episodes about Criminal Minds suspect behavior, which will be coming out in a couple of months. So that's fun. Right now, I think the episodes are up to season 4. If you check out Profiling Criminal Minds on all of your podcasts, and the reviews should start going up next week, starting with my season 10 reviews on Vargelon.com. And I am just right now finishing season 12 of like an incredibly bad season of television. Again, there was an episode where they were chasing a sleepwalker.
I don't remember that.
Who was killing people in his sleep. And here's how bad they are at catching criminals. Do you know how they find out he's a sleepwalker?
How?
They notice that it's like, that the killer was barefoot because he stepped on a piece of broken glass and it sliced open the sole of his foot. Ooh. But then his footprints leading away are completely even. So he wasn't limping or favoring it. So he must not be able to feel pain. They're like, oh my God, he must be sleepwalking. And then they show a footage of the guy waking up in bed, not knowing he's killed people. And there's like bloody footprints leading into his bedroom and a big slash in his foot. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, could you not have just followed those bloody footprints to his house?
Yeah, right? Wouldn't that be the obvious?
Couldn't that be the optimal way to capture this guy?
Oh, a trail of bloody footprints. Should we follow them? I don't think so.
Instead, let's give a profile about how we're looking for a sleepwalker. We're trying to find a connection between his targets. Or just follow the
bloody footprints.
They can't even be bothered to follow.
We can have this wrapped up by lunchtime.
Following a literal blood trail? Mm-hmm. Who can be bothered to do that?
It reeks of effort.
Oh, God. And then later they caught a vampire. But anyway.
I really don't remember that.
It was a vampire living in the sewers of New York. You don't remember any of these episodes?
No, maybe I just didn't watch them.
Then Aubrey Plaza comes back. It's not a good season of television.
I guess season 12 is when I checked out.
You made the right choice.
Or maybe it's because I started watching I would read synopses, and if it involved too much personal drama, with Reed and his mother, I just didn't, I'm like, nope, gonna skip it.
Yeah, the whole, I see what they were doing with the whole Reed's mother storyline, but this whole half a season of, the first half of the season is he's worrying about his mother, the second half of the season is he's in jail, I'm like, dear God, this was a terrible idea for a season of television.
And I think that's why I haven't seen these episodes, because I just didn't care about any of that crap. I love Reed, don't get me wrong, but I just want to watch him be a big dork and solve murders. I don't want to watch him deal with his mother, get arrested for meth, and then rot in prison. It's not what I'm here for. No, it's heroin? What is he giving her?
Heroin? No. He gets, what do you call it? Aubrey Plaza's goons plant heroin and cocaine in his car after they murder the doctor he was getting secret drugs from.
Right. Oh, no, because he got addicted to meth, way back in season 5.
Way back in the day, yeah. Right. Season 2. Yeah. Yeah, he was addicted to heroin back in season 2 and kicked it.
All right, so it was never meth.
It was never math, no.
Right. Whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is...
I didn't even mean to correct you. But yeah, they caught a sleepwalker. It was ludicrous, but every episode this season has been a little bit ludicrous. And honestly, the show has really taken a quality... it was already getting bad, but the second Thomas Gibson is fired, it gets really bad.
I know, it's still pretty bad when he was around.
No, it was very bad when he was around, but there is a noticeable drop-off in quality this year that is, kind of shocking to behold. And I'm not saying that he was responsible for mediating somebody's worst instincts, but that might be kind of what was going on behind the scenes. Because the minute he leaves, the show gets a lot dumber.
Maybe they're just running out of ideas, and what the show should have done was just very slowly transitioned into more weirdly supernatural stuff. And if you, nobody would really notice, and then, you're fighting actual vampires. And it's that's fine,
vampires for the FBI, and I guess everybody's fine with that now? Well, they've done three different episodes about how demons are real.
Well, exactly, so just turn it into a demon hunting squad, and that'll be that.
Oh my God.
Again, a show I would watch.
I would watch the hell out of that show. All right. So yeah, of course, also you can find constant new video game content at the Hidden Object Guru YouTube channel.
You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can put a comment there and tell us about where you want Criminal Minds to go. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you're listening on a podcast app, do feel free to leave us a glowing review.
Thank you so much. I encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.